In Japan, they have these kind of collector's stores, which don't really exist here. I mean, you have sort of stores here, you know, in Europe or in the States for collectors, but it's not quite the same thing. It's not, you know, they use this term otaku. You know, there's nothing really quite as obsessive as a Japanese collector in the, you know, in Europe or the States. It's never quite as extreme. And they're quite difficult to find because they might be on the sort of 11th floor of some office building. They're very specialized in terms of the music that they sell. I remember going into one that specialized in industrial music, kind of 80s industrial music. You know, they had a copy of Right to Kill there. It was £650. I mean, it was ridiculous. But it was beautifully produced. It was mint copy, you know. It was the last time I saw a mint copy was when the things actually arrived at my house for delivery, you know. What's interesting about specifically Japan in terms of that, how it influenced the prices of a lot of my records, but a lot of other stuff of that time, were that they, in fact, they took most of the distribution of these records, which was why they were so successful so quickly, that they were the first to really be interested in these weird records that we were making. So Steve and I, you know, with United Dairies and Come Organization, we would go to distributor was in fact, and wasn't a distributor at all, it was an export company. And they'd phone up and they would sometimes, you know, they'd say, how many have you got? And we say, well, we've pressed 500. And they'll say, okay, well, we'll take 450 copies. And you assume that they were distributed around the UK and the States and all around the world, Europe and everything. In fact, hardly any came to Europe. There were a few that went to the States and a few went to some, you know, to the UK. Well, when I say a few, I'm talking about maybe 20 copies. Maybe 20 copies went to the States, but 90% of them went to Japan because they were voraciously buying this stuff up, which is why so they became so, I think, why the prices went so high. There was a guy that we met from Denver in Colorado, and he bought 20 copies of everything that we published. Literally 20. So every new record, he said. So, and I assumed that he had like a record store or a label. But when we went on tour, we visited his house it's like in the middle of nowhere in Colorado, outside Denver. And he just had it for his collection, and he just had to have 20 copies of all of these albums. In fact, he had more than 20 copies because he'd buy 20 copies from us for himself, and then if he went to any other record store on his travels in the States and he saw these records, he felt compelled to buy them. He had this kind of... And I can understand that feeling because I know when I've been to record stores and something... records that are very special to me, I find it difficult not to buy it, even though I already have it. And he was doing that. He had, of one of the Peter Curtin album, he had something like 30 or more than 30 copies of it. So he'd bought 20 from us, and the other 10 he'd just bought from stores where he'd seen the record. He just felt compelled to buy it because he loved it so much. Unfortunately, I learned that he became, for whatever reason, I'm not sure, but he became disillusioned with the whole thing with his collection, early 90s, something like that. And he sold it all, but in a way he had the last laugh because he bought all these records from us for like £4 each, I think it was at the time. But then he sold them for like sort of $100 each. It's interesting, again, in speaking in the digital revolution, that there are hoarders of things like not just music, of course, but anything which can be in digital format, like you know, Google are essentially trying to do that with books. But then you've got on a micro level, you've got people trying to do that with, you know, genres of films. You know, I know guys that have 20 terabytes of horror films. You know, it's incredible, and it goes on and on and on. They're total completists. I know guys who do it with pornography. You know, and they have enormous collections of pornography. They couldn't possibly watch this stuff. You know, if they started now and watched everything that they've hoarded or collected, they would be, you know, they'd have to live for sort of 300 years in order to be able to see it. And that's without sleeping or eating or doing anything else. It would be impossible to consume. So it really is hoarding in the literal sense. There are a lot of digital sound collectors that actually they're as dedicated, and, you know, the same impulses apply as they did before, you know, and everything's collected on hard drives. I have an enormous amount of stuff myself on hard drives, you know, but I wouldn't call myself a sort of digital collector, but I know that there are, you know, and there's this, because they can accumulate so much stuff on hard drives now, which would be impossible for a physical record collection, they're able to sort of be completist. So that they can, you know, there's guys who are essentially looking to have every single, let's say, Italo Disco sound file record in digital format that there ever has ever existed. It might sound, you know, you think, well, probably there aren't that many, but there are. I mean, there are probably like 500,000 songs, something like that, out there. And these guys, that's essentially their goal, is to get the lot. People tend to see art as the object itself. And you see, it's just a personal theory of mine, but art isn't the object. Art isn't the thing that, you know, that unfortunately the way we use language creates the illusion that art is actually doing things to us, which we talk about music that is sad or makes us sad. But it's not, the art isn't making us sad, otherwise it would make a cat sad. And, you know, we're doing all these things to ourselves, and the reason we're doing that, you know, we're making ourselves sad, and we're using the art to do that, and we're using the art within the context of everything else. And the more you see it like that, the more you realize that it's in fact everything except the art. And this is it's very noticeable in music, because we all have our a unique kind of emotional response to any given piece of music.